Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
You might have heard of the co-parenting app, Our Family Wizard, but are you aware of what makes this popular app a go-to solution for over 1 million parents and family law practitioners, including myself?
It's the way that Our Family Wizard helps co-parents organize their calendars, expenses, and messages. No more back and forth texting with your ex over who's paying for your kid to give Kaylee, Kyle, Kaden, or whoever a birthday party gift.
That's right, because Our Family Wizard can organize monthly expenses, everything from medical bills to birthday party gifts, and help you send effective and productive messages without the snark. In fact, Our Family Wizard even has a tone meter, a built-in snark detector that will help you tone down your messages.
And although snark can be really fun, it's really expensive and damaging to your mental health and your kids. So save the snark for happy hour with your friends and save the money for the birthday party presents and check out Our Family Wizard.
Our Family Wizard, making co-parenting easier.
Before marriage, keep both eyes open. And after marriage, keep one eye shut.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Well, hello there, Morgan.
Hello, girlfriend.
How are you, my friend?
I'm okay. I'm okay today. How about you?
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a really good day over here. We've got some news to share with everybody, don't we?
We do. We've been kind of holding it in, haven't we?
Yeah, it's weird. This is something that's pretty big that I have not talked about at all for a while. And I think it's because, well, a few reasons. One, you know, it's a big deal. It's a private thing. I wanted to keep it close to my heart. And given the nature of what we talk about and what we support every day, I just didn't know how to introduce this major change that occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm getting the nervous sweats.
Are you? Well, you know, it's been quite some time that you and I have known what's been happening and we've been quiet about it and we've talked about it, but I'm kind of excited that you're letting our listeners in on something big happening in your life because you're really usually an open book and this has been a closed portion.
That is exactly right. This is something that I have not mentioned a peep of. And today we're going to talk about it because today we have on somebody who's going to really help me and some of our other listeners navigate these waters of blending families, which means, ladies and gentlemen,
your girl, Andrea Rappaport of the How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast, is engaged. Dun, dun, dun. There it is, folks.
Congrats.
We are so happy for you, Andrea.
I don't even know what to say. I am happy for you. I feel like you've come, even since we met, you've come such a long way. And I've seen you transform into, you know, I didn't know you well when we first met, but I can see that you're just in such a better place. And I know that, you know, you and Steve are really happy. I remember when you got engaged and how thrilled you were. Your ring is beautiful, but it's not traditional. I will tell you that. It's not the traditional engagement ring, which kind of signifies a second, you know, engagement, which is awesome. And you're just happy. You're just in your spot, which is great. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you, friend. I'm very happy. I am filled with so much love and so much hope for what's next. And like everything else, you know, it's no secret that I sucked at getting divorced, and I don't want to suck at getting remarried. I don't want to suck at blending families. It's kind of overwhelming at times.
You know what? And that's kind of why you didn't say anything for a while. I think it was you were trying to find the right way to do it. You were worried that you wouldn't be authentic or that our listeners wouldn't feel like, you know, I've got Andrea in my court, but that's not it. It's that she has finally righted most of the wrongs that she made in her divorce, and she's worked on herself and she's worked on her family, and she's in a place now where she could say, yes, I can see a life with, you know, with you, next steps. And I think that that's beautiful.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And as nervous as I am to share something that is so important to me, and I think I'm not sure. It's really funny. I don't know. I remember I was like this when I first got pregnant with my kids. I was not so open to sharing. I think things that are really, really important to me, I hold really close. And here we go. I'm sharing, I'm doing, and I'm ready to have this very first public conversation with a renowned expert on the topic. I mean, ask and you shall receive. I went a hunting on Google, and I'm there tippy-tapping on my keyboard, who's an expert on blending families? And it was the same name over and over and over again. And I'm like, okay, Ron Deal. Anyone else? Nope, Ron Deal. I'm like, this must be the Wizard of Oz. This guy is the guy. You want to blend a family? Ron Deal. You want to get married again? Ron Deal. So, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the How Not to Suck at Divorce audience, without further ado, we bring you Ron Deal.
Wow, what an introduction. I can't wait to hear what I have to say after hearing that. And congratulations to you. That is so great.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, Ron, we've been joking. We're calling you the Ron Big Deal because clearly you are a big deal. And before we even hit record tonight, I was talking about one of your books with you. I was saying, you know, I love your blending family books. And you said, which book? I've written 9 books. And I was like, oh, wow, 9? I didn't even know I was having someone on that had 9 books. I thought you had like a book or two. And no, and you have 9 books and you're all on point with the things that we talk about in my business all the time.
Well, it really is exciting to be with you guys. I've been looking forward to this. I get to do a lot of media. We have our own podcast, the Family Life Blended podcast. We have 8 video series on the subject and 9 books, as well as a team of people that I've surrounded around me that we're investing in helping single parents date well and helping blended family couples go the distance. Because who wants another divorce? Nobody, right?
Well, not this girl.
Exactly.
Not this girl.
That's right.
And Andrea, we're going to make her the guinea pig tonight. We're just, you know, she's laid out on there. She laid out on the coals tonight for everybody. So Andrea, this conversation is for you. And so I hope you have your notebook ready.
Girl, my notebook is ready and I am ready to learn a few things or lots of things. So friends, let me just tell you that we have Mr. Ron Deal, as you know. He is a best-selling author, a licensed marriage and family therapist, a podcaster, conference speaker who conducts Laugh and Learn, which I want to know more about that, Laugh and Learn marriage and family seminars and offers professional training around the country. He specializes in both marriage enrichment and stepfamily education. And now I'm out of breath. Mr. Big Deal, Ron Deal. I have to tell you, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I think I've been a little anxious even to have this conversation. I know I get anxious when I can feel my heart beating in my throat. And I've been feeling that all day today, knowing that we were going to talk, knowing that I was going to share some things that I haven't yet shared and ask you questions that really matter. All of the conversations we have on this show matter, but a lot of what we talk about are things that I have gone through in my past. With you, we're talking about the present and future, baby.
Right, right.
The stakes feel very different.
That's right, that's right. You know, there's an old Jamaican proverb that says, before marriage, keep both eyes open, and after marriage, keep one eye shut. There's some real wisdom in that.
I agree.
Hey, after marriage, you know, we all have things about us that aren't great and aren't wonderful. And one of the things we can do for each other in marriage is to turn a blind eye to a few of those things that irritate us from time to time. Have a lot of forgiveness in our souls for one another. That's keeping one eye shut. But before marriage, I'm a strong advocate that we should have both eyes open, which means this is a perfect opportunity for Andrea to learn a whole lot about what's coming, because you want to be able to see it for what it is, not what you think it is, not the fantasy. And I got to tell you, that's the first trip up for most blended family couples, is they have such a vision that is a fantasy, not really based in reality, that they head long into marriage and then they're discouraged, disillusioned, feeling like they made a mistake when really they didn't. They just didn't have the right blueprints.
So I'm super excited about this, because even though I'm a divorce attorney, one of the things that I say to any incoming client, anyone who asks me about my job, I'm a huge proponent of happy marriages. If you have a happy marriage, I'm all for it. I'm not one out there being like, everyone should get divorced. No way. That's not the right way to go about it. But if you can figure out a way to make your marriage happy, great. If you can't, that's when divorce in my mind is on the table. So after hearing about your background, I was so excited, because what happens in a lot of my cases is they come out of a really unhappy marriage. They get into a new relationship, which is wonderful for the most part. And then they're like, this is going to be great because you're so different from my ex. I'm going to hop headfirst, love at first sight. You've got 3 kids. I've got 2 kids. We are in our mid, you know, whatever, 40s, 50s, and we're just going to live this happy life. And they jump headfirst. And guess what? It's a little rockier than people expect. So I want to know something. Let's start out this. I want to know your opinion on why blending families can be so challenging, because I have seen a lot of this.
I know a stepmom who once said, being a step parent is like setting your hair on fire and putting it out with a hammer. You know, so what she meant by that was, you just kind of get it going and coming. And here's what she was getting at. Here's the great truth that we want everybody to have both eyes open to. The rules are different. The roles are different. And the relationship dynamics are often not only different, but upside down in a blended family than they are in a first family. And so people, the big mistake, or I don't even know if we can call it a mistake, it's just the thing they can't see. What they're blind to is you come out of a first marriage, and like you just said, it was awful, and that marriage was bad, and never want to go back to that. You get divorced, you find another person, and you fall in love with them, and they're so different from the last. You feel like your usness is going to be a different color than the last usness that was horrible. And that's the limit of your vision, because you think as long as you and I are married and happy, everybody else will be happy and they'll find love, and step siblings will be good with each other. Step children will love step parents. And so it's really you and I are going to make this whole thing happen. And that's really not true. In other words, coupleness does not necessarily lead to familyness. You can get to familyness, but you have to build it one step at a time, just like you build a couple relationship through the dating season. Familyness is not an automatic just because you found coupleness. Now, that principle right there, we could unpack for the next 12 hours. And let me just give you a quick example. You're a biological dad, for example, and you've got a couple of kids and you love them like crazy and they love you like crazy. And you've been through some hard crap in life, going through the divorce and now co-parenting and figuring out all that space. And you finally got a rhythm and you and your kids have developed some new rituals and you kind of have a good threesome going on in your family, right? You and your kids. So then you marry somebody who has children and you think, stepdad, okay, how different can that be? I know what it is to be a dad. I know what it is to set limits and set boundaries and to hug my kids and, you know, be their cheerleader. So I'm going to be that same guy with her kids. And step number one is maybe and maybe not. It all depends upon how old the children are, how much they receive you. The parenting style of the biological mother that you just married may fit with your style, may not fit with your style. What does the biological dad to those children think of you in the life of his children? He can completely sabotage you by just what he says to the kids about you. And so all of a sudden, what works for you as a dad does not work for you as a stepdad. And now you're lost. And now you're frustrated. And you go to your wife and watch the triangle here, guys. You go to your wife and you go, man, I need some help. I'm loving on your kid. I'm trying to do the best. Johnny won't get out of bed in the morning. School started. We're all late because he doesn't get out. I'm trying to get him up. And then your wife says, yeah, and you're a little, you know, I don't really like the way you're going about it. And you're like, whoa, time out. Did you just take your kid's side? Are you more on his side than you are on my side? See, what started out as a parenting and step-parenting dilemma has immediately become a marital issue. And now you're not sure if you can trust this wife like you experienced not trusting your last wife. And that's way too familiar. And that's frightening. And so in about a millisecond, we went from, I'm just trying to figure out how to stepdad, to I'm not sure how important I am in this marriage.
So my question hearing that is, instead of going to your partner and saying, hey, I can't get him out of bed, blah, 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 do you start off by then asking them a question and saying, I would love some input here? You know, I'm not, do you come in more humble and say, I think I need a little help. I'm not sure if that what I did was the right way. I'm open to suggestions. I just want to help you and help him, and the kid needs to go to school.
Yes, and that's an excellent little summary of a posture that step parents, when they take that, they're more collaborative and the biological parent feels less threatened and less like they've got to defend their kid. And so that sort of approach is really, really good. At the same time, it's sort of like, so what is my role, though? If my role is to just ask questions and I can't really do anything or decide anything, and oh, by the way, my son is sitting in the bedroom next to your kid and I can get him up out of bed just fine, thank you very much. Like, so it's confusing on many, many levels, the parental level as well as the marital level. So here's the point. There's just a lot of things that are sort of upside down, a lot of new space and territory that's ambiguous. And you got to navigate your way through it. Quick little analogy. The whole world didn't know this, but back in March of 2020, when it came to America, COVID taught everybody in the world what it's like to start into a blended family. Here's what I mean. On March of 2020, they said, everybody go home. Don't hang around anybody you don't know and trust super, super well. Hang out with the people you love and know the best. First thing that happens when stress hits a blended family is people begin to retreat into the relationships they know and trust the best. Kids retreat into their biological parent. Parents retreat into their children. Everybody retreats into their values and their traditions and the things that they have known that have gotten them through some hard things in the past. What is unknown is how I move toward you, my new spouse, or you, the new stepkids, new step sibling. Like, that's what's unknown. So it's ambiguous. And it's bizarre. And then you have everybody disagreeing about what we should do about it. Remember back when the politicians said you should do this or you should do that. And the medical doctor said, do this. And other people said, no, don't do that. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Like, we were in a period of ambiguity for a long, long time.
And what do you do there? You just sort of hang out. And how do you do life? And what are these new traditions? And how do you do work and school from home? Thank you very much. And we're stepping on each other's toes in the same space. And nobody really knows how to navigate that. Like, there's just lots of questions. But guess what? Give us a couple of years. And what happened? We figured it out. Yes, COVID got better, got different. We now have some vaccines that are helping, are on the scene. There's some medical doctors are starting to coalesce around certain things that are helpful and other things that are not. And so they said, okay, you can come out 10 feet away, wear a mask. Did you figure out real fast that people going into the grocery store for the very first time didn't have the same definition of 6 or 10 feet away that you had? You know, some people were 2 feet away and you're like, hey, dude, back up. Like, and they're like, no, I'm good with this. See, that you don't know how to manage physical proximity. That's analogous to, I want to hug my stepson, but he doesn't want anything to do with me. Like, I don't know how close to get. I don't know where to stand. He wants me in a mask. In fact, he wants me in a hazmat suit. He doesn't want me anywhere near him. And I don't know what to do with that. It's just strange and odd and bizarre. The pandemic taught us what ambiguity is like. And then we what? Figured it out. We've come out of it. We've sort of found our way. That's what blended families do. They can find their way, but you got to navigate through some territory that's just sort of bizarre and strange.
So, Ron, let's talk about kids for a minute. We always hear, or I hear a lot, that the kids just need to come first. And I think that that's true in a lot of situations that I deal with where, you know, divorce is at the forefront. But when you're blending families, what's your take on that, that kids need to come first always?
Yeah, it's a really important question. In co-parenting, yeah, we talk about what's in the best interest of the children. And that's a good principle. But remember, that's for two people who fell out of like with one another and don't want to have much to do with each other, right? And so that's a guiding principle to bring them together on behalf of their child. So marriage really is the foundation for every family home. But the problem is, on day one in a blended family, the kids preceded the marriage. And kids will turn to mom and say, whoa, what happened? You've always given us answers. You never had to ask anybody. Why are you asking him? Or he's got a different answer than you've always given us. Do we listen to him? Why do we have to listen to him? He's not our dad. You're the mom. Why, you know, oh, mom, I used to sit in your lap every night before bedtime. And now he's kind of snuggled up with you on the couch and there's no room for me. Do I matter anymore? And that whole issue of, we call that competing relationships, where the kids sort of feel like they're competing with the new step-parent. Step-parent sort of feels like I'm competing a little bit with the kids. That is solved when husband and wife make each other their top allegiance in life. In other words, you say to one another, till death do us part, and that changes everything. It has to change how the home is run. Husband and wife are now the team. They're now go to one another. That's the support system. You love and honor one another, even in front of the children. And you try to let you lead from the position of unity in your marriage. Getting to that point is the challenge for many. Because let me just tell you what I did not just say. I did not just say, abandon your children and only spend time with your new spouse. That is not what I'm saying at all. What I am just saying is that at the end of the day, you have this sense that our marriage has got to outlive our kids. They're going to go away. They're going to grow up and gain a life on their own. And they're going to have a world and make their own choices and move out. And it's going to be you and me. And so we've got to start living like our marriage is the foundation of this family. That's easier said than done.
And I'm assuming, and I'm sure you're about to tell me I'm right, that since we're only kind of touching this topic and we're not doing a deep dive on it, that there are books that you've written that
yes.
really
Flesh
go into.
That out. Yes.
Yeah. So can you go ahead and let everybody know what that would be? So in case someone's like, I need to know more about this.
Yeah. So if you're still single and you have kids or you're dating somebody with kids, I wrote a book called Dating and the Single Parent. That's all about dating well. Navigating the space, looking for red lights. What do those look like? What's a red light when you're about to form a blended family compared to forming a first marriage? So dating in the single parent. When you get engaged, we've got preparing to blend. that's going to help you actually do premarital program, if you will, to get ready, you and the kids, get everybody ready for life after the wedding. And then, and once you're married, the book out of our series that I would recommend is called Building Love Together in Blended Families. I wrote that with Dr. Gary Chapman, who created the Love Language Principles. And so we've integrated my principles and his to create a unified message for blended families that will really help you. One last thought about marriage kind of being the ultimate foundation. At the very same time you're doing that, we do teach that biological parents should reassure their kids, hey, you haven't lost me. I'm still here. Special one-on-one time with children, just parent and child. Step-parent needs to take a hike for a few minutes once a week and let dad or mom spend time with their kids. And here's the point. For kids, it's a major adjustment when their parent marries another person because they have to share you. And so what you want to say with this 30-minute time or two-hour time, block of time on Saturday afternoon or 10 minutes before bedtime, what you're saying with that investment of time is you haven't lost all of me. Yes, you have to share my time with somebody else. You have to share my energy with somebody else. But you still have me and you're still very important in my life. And so, yes, there's this investment in the marriage and there's an investment in kids.
What's the right way? And I know I shouldn't have said right way. What's a positive way, a good option, going about showing kids what they're gaining, right? So they know that they have to share time with, I'll just say in my instance, you know, mommy. But I want my kids to see all the positive things that will come out of this. And I know at the same time, you can't just shove it in their face.
Yes.
Look at this. What about this? You like this? You want an apple? You know, and they're like, no, go away. So I want, it's a two-part question. One, how do you do that? And two, I'm sure that the answer is going to vary depending on the age of the child.
Yeah, there's so many layers to this. Let me just take a run at it real quick. The one thing you don't want to do, Andrea, is you don't want to get into a situation where you're trying to convince your kids to love somebody they are not quite ready to love. You can't do a sales job. Single parents do this. I talk about this in Dating and the Single Parent. The mistake they make is when they say, so what do you think of, you know, John? He's a great guy. I'm enjoying going out with him. I'm actually thinking about long-term relationship. And your 16-year-old says, Mom, no, forget it. He's gross. I don't want anything to do with him. And what you cannot do in that next moment is say, oh, but he's a great guy. I'm sure you'll grow to love him. Or his kids are wonderful. Wait till you meet him. You cannot do the sales job because what you've just said to your child is, I don't care what you think. You are in for another loss and I'm going to run over you with my gain. And now you've just made it 10 times harder for that kid to soften towards a step-parent or step-siblings. Because you basically said to your child, I choose him and I throw you away. No.
What do we do?
What you do is you say, tell me more about that. I can see that this is hard for you. Don't panic is what I'm saying. Don't panic in that moment. You want to know what your kid is feeling and sensing. And a little bit of fear or a lot of fear is not uncommon. It does not mean the end of the world. It does not mean you're never going to get to marry John. It just means at this moment in time, this is a hard concept for your daughter. And you need to let her talk about that because she's afraid of losing you, of losing family, of losing connection. Oh no, is this guy going to come in and sort of try to be my dad when I'm really wanting a stronger relationship with my biological dad and I feel some stress around that? See, it's multi-layered for kids. You've got to sit in their pain with them, join them in that, and then gently over time you can perhaps lead them through. Let me get to the second part of your question. And that is, so, okay, if we can't do a sales job, how do we? Well, you create experiences where they are just close enough to one another to sort of get to know each other. Hey, here's the principle. How do you make a new friend? If I gave you guys an assignment tonight and said, I want you to go next door, you got a new neighbor, go make friends, you know, just introduce yourself and get to know them a little bit. What you would not do is run and go bang on their door as loud as you can and yell and scream and say, I'm your new BFF. You just don't know it yet. Let me in. I'm hungry.
I'd probably send them our podcast and say, you don't know me yet, but we're kind of a big deal. We just interviewed Mr. Big Deal and let's be friends.
Let's be friends. And so you can't force yourself on anybody and you can't make your children, you can't force them onto another. They have to figure it out in their own way. How would you make a friend with your new neighbor? You'd knock on the door. And you'd wait And when they started talking through the door, you'd talk back. It'd be so awkward. Through a door? Hello, open the door. I'm a nice person. But you wait because you have to pace with the new neighbor.
Right.
You pace with the person you're trying to bond with. You don't force or demand relationship.
So, Ron, I know that you lean heavily in your books, from what I can tell in most of your books, on your faith. And I want to know, you know, more about how your role, your faith plays in your opinion. How does that role of faith play into a blending, you know, family or a second marriage? How do you feel that that plays in?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the great things about faith and what you believe in, if you share that faith, it just means you don't have to fight as a couple, for example, over who's the boss in your marriage, because God is the boss. And I really mean that. You know, it's a huge principle. It's like, okay, what's right and wrong? What do we do with our money? What's important in life? Where do we spend our time? What do we invest in? What do we not invest in? What do we care about? What do we not care about? What guides our decision-making as parents? All of that is God-centric. And when that happens, guess what? You're now a team pulling in the same direction, moving in the same direction, side by side. It's not you against me. It's us working toward that. That is a massive, massive organizing principle toward oneness for couples. Another thing faith does is it just gives you that common direction and a common teacher. You know, the faith, if you will, for me, the Bible becomes the teacher to help me learn how to be a better husband. It becomes the teacher to help somebody learn how to step parent and to do so with wisdom as opposed to selfishness. Anytime we sort of lose ourselves and figure out a better direction, it's going to spin off into healthier relationships.
It's providing you a roadmap.
Yeah.
It's providing you a roadmap so you're not just shooting in the dark with this.
Life wisdom, my goodness. You know, the Hebrew Bible is filled, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, just filled with wisdom about what to do and what not to do, things to avoid in life. And whatever those decisions are, they have implication for my marriage, for my kids, for our home life. And so, again, it's a unifying wisdom that just points you in the same direction.
So now I have a question. Taking all of this into consideration, let's say that you and I are sitting down and talking the night before my wedding, right? And we're having this conversation about all of my hopes and my fears and how excited I am. And you turn to me and you say, okay, Andrea, whatever you do, I just need you to know these three few things. What would that be?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say be committed. Till death do you part really needs to mean something. And that means in thick and thin, rich and poor, ugly, pretty, all the above. I've often said God's little joke on us is that we make our commitments at the beginning of the marriage. We take our vows at the beginning of the marriage. Right. And then life teaches us what we committed ourselves to.
You right. Know, yeah, right? There's not a hair and makeup squad.
Exactly. Surprise. You didn't know that you were going to have to figure out how to deal with this in your wife. So commitment is the thing that provides the stability for you to navigate through those potholes of life. Without commitment, people bail, and there's no emotional safety there. And your partner knows it. They can read it fast, and then they're not committed to you, and it just all falls apart. So be committed. That'd be number one. Number two, I would say it's helpful if you know how to cook a step family.
Cook for a family?
I said actually cook a step family.
Cook a step family.
This is a big principle that I've taught for
years.
In
the 60s here? Okay.
No. Well, if it makes you feel any better, Morgan, and when, for his number one, when he said be committed, I thought he meant to a mental hospital. So I am so far behind.
You have a lot of learning.
Okay, I can do that. Uh-huh.
A lot of learning, girl. Okay.
You're halfway there.
say number two again, because I totally messed up your vibe.
Yeah. So. It helps if you know how to cook a step family. Here's what I mean. Every couple, when they come together and they're forming a blended family, they have, without even knowing it, they have in their head some principles about how they're going to bring all these family members together. let's call them ingredients, right? You're going to make stew in your family. You got beef, you got potatoes, you got carrots, you got celery, you got some water, you got some spices. I don't know. I had one guy say beer. You put beer in stew. I don't know. I don't put the, but you get the idea. And so how are you going to bring these ingredients together? Well, what most people want to do, since we call them blended families, is they want to throw everybody in a blender and turn it on. And what happens? In 30 seconds, all the ingredients become one fluid mixture. Now, that is a wonderful dream. It's a long-term dream. It's a fantasy. It's actually what biological families are, because they don't have to choose love. They just sort of have it. And it, the same last name, the same history, like the same bloodline, like all of that is a unifying thing that is, it is beyond choosing love.
And that's not stew.
And that's not stew.
It's not blended.
Right. And so blenders, unfortunately, chop all the ingredients up. So what you're saying to your daughter when you get married is, hey, honey, I know he's not your dad. He's my husband. But why don't you call him dad anyway? That's a blender mentality. You're trying to force relationships, ingredients into a relationship that they're not ready to choose yet. You cannot do that. That is the wrong way to cook a step family. The right way is with a crock pot.
Love
how do crock pots work?
Love it.
Crock pots work with time slow. And low heat. Time and low, we call them slow cookers in some parts of the country. Time and low heat. So what happens? You dump all the ingredients in. That's called a wedding. And then you put a lid on. And you say, we're done. Nope. Oh, we're going to come back from a quick 1 week honeymoon. We're done. No, you need about 8 hours. The average blended family needs 5 to 7 years.
Whoa.
To find their fit. To
I
build
love
what
that
we
you
call
just quantified that for people.
Familyness. That's the best research we have. Average 5 to 7 years. That's not with counseling or anything. That's just finding their way. The more intelligent you are in how you heat the ingredients, the quicker the process can go. Sometimes for most ingredients, there's always one ingredient. You know, there's that Mr. Potato Head who's not collaborating with everybody else. And keep in mind that Potato Head gets out of your pot every other weekend and goes to another pot. And over there in that pot, he's trying to merge with a number of new ingredients over there as well. And they have a different set of rules and they have a different heat level and they have different expectations. And that then he comes out of that pot and he comes back to your pot and he's kind of lost for about 2 days. And then he figures out, oh yeah, this is where I am. This is when I go to bed and this is how people work and this is how parents and step-parent works. And they have to regroup. And all of that impacts how quickly that ingredient cooks. I had a chef one time. Came to one of my speaking events, and actually it was his wife who caught me at a break, and she ran up to me and she said, my husband says you're right about that crockpot thing. My husband says you can't fool food. And I looked at her and said, I have no idea what you're talking about. What in the world are you saying? And she said, well, you can't force something to cook faster than it will cook. So parents are often really frustrated with a 13-year-old or a 35-year-old. The same principle works with adult stepchildren. It could happen at any age. We get frustrated because they're not cooking at our pace, but you can't fool food. You can't yell at the potato head and get him to cook at your speed, at the speed of carrots or the speed of celery. Every ingredient has its own pace, its own path. But here's the cool thing about crockpots. When things warm up and when they soften, because that's what happens over 6 to 7, 8 hours, then they start merging.
You know what? People soften after 5 to 7 years as well, whether they want to or not.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So when you have this mentality and you as an adult, parent, step parent, whatever the case is, you come in slow, soft, gentle, not forcing, not high expectation, not call me mom, not nothing like that. As a matter of fact, what you would say as a stepmom to your stepchildren is, hey, look, I am not the mom. I want you to know that I'm never going to replace your mom. Your mom's special in your life. I'm going to honor her. I'm going to speak well of her. And if you ever feel like you're missing time with your mom, you let me know. I'm going to help. Like that is a crock pot heat, low heat opposed to a blender high heat that is trying to force and manipulate and control. You will get much farther crock potting than you ever will blendering.
I love this. I love the analogy of making a stew as opposed to making a smoothie, right? And I think what's also beautiful about the stew crock pot analogy is that over time, the longer that stew cooks on low heat, the more that those flavors come together, you get a little bit of meat in that potato. You get, you know, everything starts to meld, but you can't force it. Also with the stew, you can't bring a stew to a boil. There's no fast way of making it, right? It has to sit and simmer. Oh, my mind is blown. I love when this happens on our show, Morgan, when we have so this moment. Okay, so what's number three?
Yes. Oh,
number three would be enjoy what's going well. Now, here's what's so counterintuitive about this.
Okay.
If you're 10 minutes into the crock pot and you look around, you go, man, nobody's softening. You and I love each other. That's how this whole thing started, because we wanted to get married and we really enjoy each other and that's going good, but I can't really see anybody else joining into the fun. And now what do you feel? Disappointment and disillusionment.
Yep.
And if you have a blender mentality, you're thinking, well, it should be 30 seconds. We should be past this already. And no. We're talking years, not seconds. And so your disillusionment makes you unhappy with what's going well. You've got one ingredient who's softened. You know, here's the thing about kids. Kids under the age of 5 tend to bond with a step-parent almost faster than the step-parent is ready for. Why? Because young kids are so open to new people in their life. They just love everybody in the world, and you're just a nice person. And so a 2-year-old falls in love with stepmom. The hardest time to enter a child's life is between the ages of 10 and 15. So you've just acquired a stepdaughter who's, if you're a stepmom, stepdaughters, that's the hardest combination. She happens to be 13. She's in the middle of adolescence, puberty, all kinds of crazy stuff going on in her world. Right? She's in her social media world. She has no time for you whatsoever. And she doesn't care that you want to be in her life. She has no motivation for a relationship with you. Guess what? That's discouraging. But if you let that one ingredient, one relationship dominate, and you stop enjoying what is going well, then it overwhelms you and you're discouraged about the whole crock pot. But if you can look around and go, yeah, man, struggling, still trying to figure this thing out, but this is going well and this is going well, and you and I are learning how to parent together and we're making some headway with this kid and we figured out how to merge some of our money together and I'm feeling really great about that. Enjoy what's going well.
So the moral of the story is don't forget about the celery. There's celery in the pot still. There's potatoes in the pot. So if the meat is raw, you just leave her to the side and you just think about the potatoes and the vegetables, right?
You got it. You got it. You keep working on it. That's right. A word to what we call adult step family. So maybe you're later in life. Maybe you're in your 60s and you're dating again and you're thinking about marriage and all the kids are out of the home and you're like, this is going to be easy because we don't have to worry about all those ingredients. Wrong.
I've seen it.
30-year-olds, 50-year-olds, kids, they have just as much investment in mom's life as they do if they were living in your home, because they still want to go home at Thanksgiving. And the last thing they want to do is go home at Thanksgiving and have mom's new husband and his 3 adult kids and their 6 grandchildren that he's never met before. This is not mom's house anymore. It's not my house anymore. I don't know who I am. And there's identity questions that get asked in all of this. Doesn't matter the age of your children. And so you too need to think crockpot about the merger. People will say, I got a 30-year-old who doesn't want to be with us. How's he ever going to get to know my new husband? Well, he's not. I mean, the bottom line is that's up to him, not up to you. So you can create opportunities. You can take him to a baseball game. You can invite him over for Sunday dinner and hopefully they'll come and you'll get a couple hours with him and then that's it. But hey, a couple hours on Sunday magnified over a lot of time could add up to stuff. You just got to be patient and not start blundering.
I love it. Wait, Ron, I have a question for you. I mean, those 3, you know, pieces of advice were so valuable to us and to our listeners and probably to Andrea. But my question is, what is like the number one thing you see? Like, where do you see couples go totally off the rails? What's like the thing you see over and over again? Big mistakes.
Okay, I'll give one for biological parents, one for step parents.
Great.
And then one for couples. How about that?
Let's do it.
So biological parents become paralyzed sometimes in their parenting of their own children. And that is a big setup because the step parent's going, hey, look, you know, love your kid, but won't clean the kitchen when it's their turn to do the chore. Everybody else doing their job, you know, your number two child is not doing theirs. Can you help me out with that? And the bio parent says, oh yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I need to get on it. And then they don't. And this is a point of contention because the step parent's going, hello. All the other kids are wondering why. My kids are coming to me going, hey, how come he gets to not have to clean? We're all having, like, there's injustice in the home. Like, it will begin to turn people against each other fast. Mm-hmm. The conflict will escalate. And biological parents sometimes get paralyzed because they're afraid. Sometimes it's they feel guilty over something they did, choices they made. Life's been hard for my kid. I don't want any more hard for my kid. And so the thinking is, if I go easy on my kid and not make them clean the kitchen, then somehow I'm doing them a favor. And of course, developmentally, no, you're not. But the other big thing is that just creates conflict in you and the new step relationships. And so you got to buck up and be the parent for your children. That's number one. Paralyzed parenting will sabotage. Number two, for step parents, aggressive step parents who come in, I'm going to right all the wrongs in your kids.
Oh, God. There's a sheriff in town.
There's a new sheriff in town, and that's me and my way or the highway. Or, sorry, I don't cook those kind of foods. You're going to eat my food. Just, wow. Making unilateral decisions without talking to the biological parent and in unison, making any sort of changes, you do it together. You don't do it all on your own. That too will just bring the conflict to the surface fast. And then the last thing for couples is running from risk. And this too is a little counterintuitive. I wrote a book with a researcher, David Olson, and I teamed up. We did the largest survey of couples forming blended families ever done. The book's called The Smart Step Family Marriage. The Smart Step Family Marriage. And we drilled down to what predicted health among blended family couples and what predicted a lot of discouragement and distress in their relationship. And one of the things that surprised, a lot of things didn't surprise us, communication, you know, working together on parenting, that kind of thing. We predicted that. What did not predict was fear. And it goes like this. My last husband walked out on me, betrayed me, whatever the story was, created a big residue of hurt on my heart. And every time I see you say something, but sort of do something different, I kind of think, oh my gosh, here we go again. Or you didn't tell me about that one expense. Why not? Or, you know, you spend a lot of time with your kids. You don't really give much time to my kids. Is that because you don't really love them? You don't really love me. You don't really love us. You see how that seed of fear, we call it the ghost of marriage past, comes and sits on your shoulder and it starts talking you out of risking your heart in love. And here's the deal. You got to push through that fear or you will constantly withhold yourself in small and big ways. And that will hurt your relationship.
We talk about that a lot in our private community. We have a large number of divorcing individuals who have unfortunately went through or survived, participated in really unhealthy marriages. There's a lot that comes with it. And there are a lot of people, when I first introduced the topic of this show that we're recording right now to this group, they're like, yeah, blending families, that's something I'll never do. And it's for a few reasons. Number one, because they are so wounded. There are so much in them. And I think actually, this might be one of the reasons why I was so hesitant to talk about the fact that I'm getting married. Because there's a large number of men and women who follow what I do on social media who, like me, suffered something awful. And I don't want to come off as like, well, I'm all better now. Sorry for your loss, you know? And then at the same time, I get it. There's a lot that you have to work through and heal. And I've talked about this a lot. My fiance and I have gone into couples therapy together a while ago to start working through this stuff because it's not just about what happened, and I'm using air quotes for those of you who cannot see me, what happened to you. It's all those behaviors that you pick up, right? To survive something that was not working. And now it's like I can have a completely unjustified response to something that comes my way because now I'm sent back in time to when, oh, here we go again. And it's not congruent with what's actually going on. And so I think there's so much validity in what you're saying.
You know, the neurobiology of the brain that we've learned in the last 15 years has been really fascinating. One of the things we know is that you really do develop ruts in your brain, call them neuropathways. And it's sort of this stimulus response sort of thing that when that is repeated over and over again, it just becomes this automatic see this and feel that, and then respond in this way. When you go through pain and difficulty and trauma, that too can develop this sort of, how do I cope with this? And mm-hmm. the coping could be about pulling back into yourself, could be about not trusting other people. And you really can live there for a very long time, and it's okay. You don't ever have to come out of that. But here's the thing. Venturing into uncharted territory, taking a risk, is one of the ways that you begin to alter and create new neuropathways, new brain ruts, if I could call them that, that creates literally a new experience of life and opens up new possibilities for you. Here's the thing I want to say to people who are single. You don't ever have to make a lifelong commitment to another person ever again. That's totally optional. To do so probably should bring some measure of fear, because it's deep. And yeah, there's risk involved in commitment. Absolutely. And at the same time, that journey, if it goes well, can be the beginnings of joy in ways that you haven't experienced in a very, very long time. It does take risk to get to the joy.
I love that. I'm feeling a lot right now. On the topic of feeling, I have another question I want to ask you before we get into our last part, which is some action steps. So this is like vulnerable for me to share, but here goes. So it's a little weird to me that my fiance and I are in the process of building this beautiful life together. And I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm so happy. And at the same time, my fiance and I will not have the ability to have children together. So that ship has gone. And we'll be raising our kids together, but we don't have children biologically together. And there's a part of me that aches for that. I don't like it. It almost makes me feel like our relationship is less than. What is that? Is there something wrong with me?
No.
Is this a me issue?
No, there's nothing wrong with you. That's a very common story. We just heard in our work just yesterday from a woman who said, I've never been married before. I married a man who's divorced, got three kids. Everything that he and I experienced together will be my first, and it'll be his second. And I just feel like I've missed out on all the specialness of, you know, just doing life together, because for him, it's that sort of old hat, you know? And so she's really jealous of not having that sense of completeness and togetherness. And I think I hear a similar sort of feeling in what you're saying. And that's very natural. Again, here's the reality. Blended families on day one in the crock pot are a collection of little parts. So you and your kids is a collection of relationships that have a certain tone and tenure and temperature and history and ritual and tradition and all of that wrapped up in you and them. And he and his kids have the same thing. And now there's you and him. That's a new part of this crock pot. And so there's a bunch of, and you may have one or two kids, like they've connected and they've bonded fast and they talk about and have the same things in common. And then there's other kids that are still on the outs, sort of finding their way. The truth is, it is a collection of parts on day one, but that's what crockpots do, is that they eventually soften the parts and they begin to merge. But that integration time takes time. And in between now and then, you will just sort of feel like you're not whole. That's not a bad thing. That's actually true, if I could say it that way. It's not a cut. It doesn't mean you're less than. It just means you're in process.
We're in the simmering process.
You're simmering.
We've got 6 more hours to go.
That's right.
There you go.
5 to 7 more years, although maybe this interview will shave off some of my time. Maybe I'm going to be so much better
for
this conversation.
Will.
We're going to cut it down to 3 to 4.
All right. So speaking of that, so Ron, leave our listeners with 3. We love action steps on this podcast.
Love them.
Okay.
Love them. Makes it super simple. So, I mean, I know legally we just scratched the surface of the things that I deal with in my, you know, with my clients and my cases, moving on, blending families. So I feel like we're scratching the surface with you and your books, and probably we need to expand and probably have you back on to really just dive in, because there's so many facets of blending families. But my question is, leave us with 3 action steps, please, about blending families. How do we do things better? Because we're all about doing things better over here.
Okay. So first thing would be get stepfamily smart. That's a little slogan that we use. And what we mean by that is learn as much as you can about stepfamily living. You may be listening right now and you're going, I'm not dating. I don't think I'm ever going to date again. Why would I need to do that? Well, maybe a quick read of an article or something, listen to a podcast, just sort of absorbing a few things may help you either be more interested and intrigued, or may help you just go, yeah, I'm on the path I need to be on. If you're dating, absolutely, it's time to start learning as much as you can, because it informs every decision you make. My whole book, Dating and the Single Parent, is about guiding you through the first meeting somebody to the making decisions about engagement, because there's a whole pathway there, not only for you, but for your children. And how do you bring them along rather than inadvertently sort of turn your back to them and walk away? Like, that's the last thing you want to do. And so do that with wisdom. When you get stepfamily smart, you make better decisions about the next step. And I just can't emphasize that enough. The second suggestion I would make is that, okay, you've heard this. Now it's time to share it with somebody you trust. That could be somebody you're dating. That could be somebody that is important to you, a friend or a family member who knows you and knows the journey you've been on. And you can ask them to listen. And then say, give me your feedback. What do you think is relevant for me in my life where I am now? If you're dating somebody, absolutely, listen to it. Each of you together or separate, whatever it is, come together and have a conversation. What did you hear? What did you think? What did that spark in you? Let that be the first step towards getting smart together. See where that goes? Okay. And then the last thing. Okay. And then the last thing is, I know this sounds kind of maybe a little strange, but there is a community out there of blended family couples who are making the journey, and they've learned a few things and they're sharing it with other people. Reach out, Facebook, whatever it might be, social media. Yes, those are channels where you can begin to get connected with something bigger than just you. Kind of get out of your isolation, start jumping into the community of people that know this territory better than you. It's amazing what that does. We've created a lot of curriculum that we, you know, push out, and churches use it, and sometimes couples just go through it all on their own. But one of the things we know is when couples go through that material together, when they have dinner once a month and just sit down and go, how are things at your home? And they get real about one another's lives. Whatever information you picked up along the way, it begins to take more root and come alive for you. And you just... I really think there's power in the community that you don't get from just listening to a podcast all on your own.
That is exactly why we started our private community, because
yeah,
you cannot do this alone. So you can't get divorced on your own. We don't want you to go through the blending family process alone. And you've inspired me. I decided that I think I will start to put together a local group of other blended families for, like, you know, monthly dinners, just to, you know, bring people together to learn more, to help other people, and just continue this conversation, because that's what this is all about, right?
That's right.
I think it's such a topic that's not talked about enough. I've watched so many of my clients actually have really solid relationships with new people, but they couldn't make the blending family work. And it's unfortunate, because they had to walk away from a pretty awesome relationship because they couldn't figure it out. And I just, Ron, I'm so thrilled that you put out this you know, literature, these books. This is huge stuff.
Let me just piggyback on that. Listen to this. Couples get married and form a blended family because they've fallen in love with a person. But they divorce because they don't know how to be a family.
Agreed.
When you learn how to be a family, ultimately, that is also about protecting and guarding your marriage and your future together as a couple. Now, here's the good news. Blended families done well are, the research has actually shown us that kids who grow up in strong, healthy blended families compared to kids who grew up in a single parent home or in a step family that was difficult. Kids who grow up in healthy blended families actually look more like children who grow up in biological families. They make better decisions as young adults about their own new partners. They tend to have one partner for life. They have a better sense of marriage and commitment, and their life smooths out. In other words, a healthy blended family is, if I could use the word, redemptive in the life of people in that home and the next generation. But we also know this, step families done poorly just adds more chaos and pain and difficulty to people's lives. So when you get step family smart, you're moving towards health, not only for your life, but your kids.
And that's exactly why we wanted to have this really important conversation with you, because there's so many people out there who, like Morgan said, don't even want to make that jump into doing this because they're going to think, no, not for me. And we want people to have that hope, have that faith, if you will, that you can do this. Everybody deserves to be happy. Your children also deserve to be in a family. And they deserve to see you with a partner. And they deserve to see you with a partner where it all works. And that's one of the things that I am so excited to offer my children. And I know how much work it's going to be. And I'm ready to get in that crock pot and, you know, not push blend. We're simmering. Simmering 6 to 8 right. hours.
Are you the carrots or the celery?
Girl, I'm the meat.
Oh, what?
Carrots or celery? I am the prime roast, honey child. Kids can be the celery and onion potatoes. No, Lord, no. I am the meat. If you were in the crock pot, Morgan, what would you be?
I'd be the potatoes. Just round. Just floating around. Hanging out, checking things out.
And Ron, like which stew ingredient do you relate to most?
Well, I think I'd be the spices, whatever that is that you throw Ooh. In to just sort of bring it to taste and make it really jump. I don't know. Actually, that probably would be my wife. That's probably who she is.
Oh, I like that. I wish I would have said I'm the spices. I took the meat. Oh, man. Okay, Ron, you have got a library of literature to offer people. Please, please tell everybody where can they go to get their hands on something. And if someone goes to wherever you're about to send them and they are completely overwhelmed yeah. with all 9 options to choose from, can you point them in a direction of where they should possibly start?
You bet. I'm affiliated with a couple of organizations, but the simplest, best place to kind of find everything I'm doing, live events, virtual events, training for leaders, all that kind of stuff, is smartstepfamilies.com. Smartstepfamilies.com. Again, if you're a single parent or dating somebody who is, I think the book Dating in the Single Parent is the best first place to start. If you're already in a blended family or know somebody who is, which is a high likelihood, recommend the book Building Love Together in Blended Families, co-authored Dr. Gary Chapman and myself.
I love that. And there was one other book that you mentioned that I said earlier on in our conversation that I needed to get.
Preparing to Blend. That's the book, Preparing to Blend. It's for
engaged. I was looking at online. I was like, okay, this is really interesting.
Yeah, that's for engaged couples. It's essentially a premarital counseling program in a book. You can do it yourself. Well, you can go to a
cart for me, Morgan.
There you go.
It'll be your engagement gift.
I got you a gift, girl. I got you a gift, my little meat pie.
my sassy roast. I'm just going to send
my
you this
sassy roast minus the spices. I can't tell you how grateful I am that you joined us to have this conversation. I feel better for talking about it, having it, and I'm still a little bit like shaky and sweaty for sharing something so exciting and personal. And thank you for being here to kind of walk me through this and to share your wealth of knowledge with all of our listeners.
Well, Andrea Morgan, listen, it's an honor for me to be with you, and your audience gets good stuff. So thanks for what you do.
We really appreciate that.
All right, Mr. Ron Big Deal. Holy cow. That was eye-opening and scratched the surface. I saw you sweating over there at times, but I feel like you're kind of off and running to a new, happy, potential marriage, right?
This was a great way to, you know, kick off this next part of my life. And, you know, as I'm honored. I'm honored to be doing this in real time with everybody. And man, these tidbits, these words of wisdom, like, let's just like go over it. So for me, he said, it was be committed, learn how to cook a step family, which is where we got into the whole stew analogy. And then the third one, oh my gosh, my brain. Do we remember the third one? I don't even remember because my mind is so
smart. Maybe be step parent smart. I mean,
I don't even know. Here's the thing. My mind. Here's what I go back and
right, but here's what I took away from it. There's like literature out there that deals with this. Everyone, I still thought, like, before he came on our podcast, I'm like thinking to myself, gosh, these poor people blending families. And I've seen it in my clients not work out with really good people on both sides just because they couldn't figure it out with the families. But there's stuff to help you. And that's, I think, the takeaway here is don't feel like you're just paddling out there and like you're unique because you're dealing with all the same stuff that probably, you know, Joe Schmo down the street is dealing with the other, you know, the same stuff as well in their house blending.
Right.
So there's stuff to help you out there.
Right. There are people to help you and stuff to help you, which goes back to the action steps that he gave at the very end, which is get the education. There's education out there. Be proactive and find a community. Find a community online, just like how we help people, you know, with not feeling like they're alone while they're getting a divorce. Well, the process of blending families can also feel quite isolating.
Oh, I bet.
And we don't want that to happen either. So, guys, for those of you who are listening to this episode and thinking, okay, well, nice for you, Andrea. Good for you. I'm getting engaged and remarried. That is never going to happen to me. Don't go there yet. Hang on. Take this thing one day at a time. You don't know what's going to happen. I did not see this for myself a few years ago.
I don't even think when we met, you know, started doing this, I even thought your brain was there. I mean, it took you a long time to even get to this place.
It took healing, it took learning, and it just took time. So guys, that's why we're doing this show. We are helping you through this process. So please share this episode. This episode was a little bit different than other conversations we've had on our show. So if you have someone who maybe doesn't listen to the show because they're not currently going through a divorce, but, you know, this episode applies to them, send it on over. We would love that and be so honored to be able to help somebody else with this conversation.
Right. And remember, whether you're blending families, going through a divorce, whatever it is, everyone's going through something. That's a thing. Don't judge. Just everyone's in their own place. And you know what? Some days really suck. And that's okay, because tomorrow's going to be a better day. And that's why we always say divorce, the whole process is a marathon. Blending families is clearly a marathon, 5 to 7 years. You got this. So if it's not a good day, guess what? Take it hour by hour. That's what we always say.
Stick your thoughts and feelings in a crock pot and let it simmer. You are going to be okay. Please go and join our private communities. Go and rate and give us a review on Apple. We would love you for it. And guys, just know that we love and appreciate every single one of you.
And you know what? If you have a good stew recipe, I mean, share it. Send it to us. Andrea loves a good stew recipe, especially with some roast in it.
Oh, girl, I'm the meat. So we're going from banana bread to stew, honey.
We're going to simmer that. We're going to do it. So send us your recipe.
And to Mr. Ron Big Deal's point, if you have questions regarding blending families, send them on over, because guess what? I think we're going to bring Mr. Ron Big Deal back on our show very soon.
Exactly.
And in the meantime, my friends, take a deep breath. You can do this. And you have got this, and we've got you.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.